We have a few different topics for today, and we're going to try to hopefully integrate them into one whole. The first topic for today is what I call psuchos and stumos. And that's going to be very relevant to Parshas Ki Tsetse, but it's really relevant to all over the Torah. So what I'm going to ask you to do, if you have a chumash, and again, I can't tell you if the art school tells you about stumos and psuchos, I assume they do, but certainly the big blue ones tell you, you're going to open up to Shmos Lamed Zayin, which is Parshas Vayakel, and we're going to take a look at Psukim Tez Zayin and Yud Zayin. Okay then?
We're not doing Pisato?
Again, right now we're doing something about Psuchos and Stumos, I'll explain to you, and that's going to lead up to an understanding that is relevant, hopefully, to the entire Torah, and especially to Chodesh El, to the month of El. That's what my topic is
Lamed
for today.
Zayin. Which one?
Okay, so we're in Lamed Zayin, and we're in Pasuk Tez Zayin. Vayas es hakelim asher al hashulchan. There were a number of different utensils that were prepared as part of the building, the mitzvah of building the Mishkan, and they were placed on the Shulchan. The Torah here in this pasuk specifies a whole bunch of them. Karosav, Kaposav, Menikiosav, Kashosav, fine. And they were all made of pure gold. In the next pasuk, the Torah tells us, Vayas es ha-menorah. The menorah was likewise made of Zav Tar. It was also made of liquid gold, of pure gold. It was not placed on what? On the Shulchan. It has no relevance to the Shulchan. What letter do you find between Pasuk Tez Zayin and Pasuk Yud Zayin? Which would be a lot clearer if we had a Sefer Torah in front of us. A pay. Do you have a big pay? If you don't have a big pay, then you're looking into the wrong chumash. You need this chumash, okay? No, this chumash is the real chumash. What you have is the art school. No offense to art school, but if you don't have a big pay. So what's a big pay? A big pay indicates that between one verse and another verse, there's an entire empty line. I don't mean an entire empty line. It all depends on where the last two words are. But let's say the last two words, for argument's sake, in this case, are the beginning of a line. Then the entire balance of that line is blank space. That's called a parasha psucha, which means that you could see with the naked eye that you're beginning a new section, so to speak. Okay?
So is it space? And that space is the indication of ptucha.
That's called a ptucha. It's not an indication. It is called a ptucha. Ptucha means this pay is telling the sofer that he should make sure to start a new line over here. It's what we call in computer language, I think, the return button. Starting a new paragraph. Yeah. In America, tell me if it's the same all over the world, because I just don't know. We have something called a C with two lines in it. Do you have that in your countries? It's like a C with two lines in it. That's the symbol they use in America to indicate that you have to start a new paragraph. What do they do in Australia or in England?
Start a new paragraph.
No, but what happens if I have to tell the editor that here he should start a new paragraph?
A right angle.
Oh, a right angle. Okay, so every country, I guess, has its own symbol. In the Torah language, it's called a pay. Okay? The pay does not appear in the Sefer Torah. You won't find the pay in the Sefer Torah, but you'll find it in the Masorah, if you follow what I mean. Now, leaving that as one example, but again, don't lose the place, because I'm going to ask you in a minute, what's the difference between a pay and a samach in conceptual terms? Now I'd like you to open up backwards to the beginning of the Torah, Bereishis Perek Gimel. Okay then? Perek Gimel, Pasuk Tes Vav, these are the punishments that God meets out in the aftermath of the Chet of Adam HaRishon, what's called the Chet of the Eitz Hadas. Again, we don't know exactly what the Eitz Hadas was. You know, some say it was a wheat grain. I don't know if you've ever heard that. People think it's an apple. Rabbi, there are like five different sheetahs, but not one of them thinks it's an apple. Okay, so that's purely Christian theology. But okay.
Rabbi, we used to actually this morning and yesterday in the Gemara.
Oh, you're kidding! Wow, I'm telling you, there's got to be a connection between 5 to 11 and 5 after 11. Okay, fine. So we're looking in Bereishis Gimel, right? Perek Gimel Pasuk. Tezvav, and this is the punishment meted out to the Nachash. It says, "V'eva ashis beincha ubein ha'isha ubein zarach ubein zara." Correct. And then, if you go to the next verse for a moment, El Isha Amar, and she's going to suffer the divine punishment of having to suffer when she gives birth, etc., etc. What's between, again, you won't be able to answer this question if you don't have the big blue chumash, but what's between the tesvav and the tesayin? A big samach. Okay, so what we saw in Parshas Vayakel, and again, I can give you thousands of examples, I just chose these examples because I think they convey the message. What's the difference between Vayakel, where the Torah separates the Asiya, the building of the Kalim on the Shulchan, with the building of the menorah, which is in the same Heichal, but it's not on the Shulchan, and those are separated by what's called a pay, which is a psucha, as opposed to the punishments here that are beat out in the aftermath of the Cheta Adam HaRishon, where the two psukim, one addressing the serpent and one addressing the Isha, are separated by not a pei, a psucha, but by a stuma, a samach. Can anybody want to take a shot at that?
The second ones are both connected to the same thing.
Which one indicates a certain connection, a much more profound connection? Exactly, Michael is right on target. A psucha means a whole new paragraph. Yeah, you want to talk about the shulchan? We'll talk about the shulchan. Want to talk about the menorah? We'll talk about the menorah. These are different facets, and different. Each one has a different purpose. And if you want to know the yisodas of the shulchan, we can have a whole shiur on that. And I've spoken about this in the past. What's the yisod that underlies the menorah? A whole different shiur, a whole different theme. Those are obviously two different themes, and they are separated by a pay, which is an open-ended return button, as we call it in computers. Here, on the other hand, in terms of the punishment, what does the fact that the two are separated only by a samach, meaning the nachash, who's being addressed in pasuk tesvav, as opposed to the isha, who's addressed in pasuk tesvav, those two psukim are only separated by a samach, which means that in the Sefer Torah there's no empty space. What does that indicate to you?
That
although they're separate, but they're connected. Now, what I want you to do now is to fast forward.
So, just to say, yes. So between Tet, Rav, and Tet Zayin, there's a Samach.
Right. Samach means a stuma. Stuma means a connection. You won't find them separate.
Really, the space, because the art scroll has got a bit of a space.
Okay, the art scroll will give you a space because the art scroll is interested in giving you a conceptual kind of presentation, and certainly once there's a samach there is some separation, but it's a hidden separation in the Sefer Torah because the Torah wants you to look at it with the naked eye and see that they're connected. For example, again, I don't want to get off on a tangent because this is a shiur unto itself. Vayechi, which is the last parasha in Sefer Bereishis, is a stuma. And Chazal have a lot to say about it. Why should a parasha open up with a stuma? There will be no separation between the end of Vayigash and the beginning of Vayechi. How could that be? Fine. But that's a shiur unto itself, not for us now. Now, there's a Sefer called the Kiryas Sefer. Now, what is the purpose of that Sefer? You know that our rabbis are calculating things. For example, there are certain rabbis that dedicated themselves to calculate how many verses there are in each parasha. Others calculate how many mitzvahs there are in each parasha. The Kiryas Sefer dedicated his work to calculate in a particular parasha how many stumos and how many psuchos there are. Okay, so for a sofer, he has to. It's called Kiryas Sefer, but it's really Kiryas Sofer, because it's really a very important Mesorah Sefer to tell you, you know, if you're a Sofer, exactly, make sure you get this right, because the Sefer Torah depends on it. And Parshas Ki Tetzer, which is in a certain sense the most complex parsha in the Torah, and I already promised you on Sunday that I was, you know, I was still reserving my right to come back to Parshas Ki Tetzer, is complex from the perspective of mitzvahs. Some count as many as 74 mitzvahs, which makes Ki Tetzer the largest parsha as far as mitzvahs concerned in the entire Torah. So if I were to ask you, if, again, don't cheat and look inside the page yet, just I want to get your knee-jerk reaction, I'm trying to get you to give me the wrong answer, so here the wrong answer is the right answer. Would you anticipate, in a parsha that has so many different mitzvahs, more psuchos or more stumos? Just give it a minute to let the question sink in.
I was thinking about this. Too hot, but you're going to say the answer.
Exactly. I would anticipate a lot more psuchos. Why? Because what you're going to see in Parshas Ki Tetzer is a vast number of mitzvahs. One has nothing to do with the other. Again, I'm giving it a very extreme. Obviously, I'm making a pedagogic statement here that's meant to put up your dukes, and, you know, I want you to fight me on this. But initially, as a knee-jerk response, I would certainly look at the mitzvahs, and I can give you a list of them. They cover every single area, every gamut of the Torah. One mitzvah has nothing to do with the other. And yet, if you take a look at the Kiryas Sefer, which is the source number 3 on your page, and I want to thank here publicly Rav Noach Olbaum Shlita, if anybody knows of him, he's one of the great Rabbanim in America today, and he put together all these sources, and I was lucky that I was on a list, an email list, so I was able to get this on an email. And again, I don't know what he said. All I have is just the source material. But I'm just going to tell you what I would say. What I would say is that the Kiryas Sefer is unbelievable. He says, Nishlam HaSeder, this is the end of Parshas Ki Tetzer, Uklal Parshiosov, and in all the different Parshios, means the subdivisions that make up Parshas Ki Tetzer, Mem Dalit. Mem Dalet means there are 44 parshios. The word parshios means both stumos and psuchos, either or. If you calculate all the psuchos and all the stumos that set up various sub-parshios of Ki Tetzer, the number is 44. Okay? Now he tells you, well, what's the subdivision of the 44? Look at that. Shnayim psuchos. Only two of them are psuchos. Umem be stumos. Now again, unfortunately, you have the art scroll in front of you. If you have the blue chumash in front of you, it's so obvious to the naked eye. You just open up Parshas Ki Tetzer, and every pasuk ends with a samach, so to speak. Meaning there's a samach that separates almost every verse from the other. And if you count up all the samachs here, the number, the total number, says the Kiryas Sefer, is nothing less than 42 stumos. And then it's a cinch to find the psuchos. There are only two psuchos in the entire parasha. So again, please open up, if you will, to Perek Chav Beis of Sefer Dvarim. Okay, we got the... I call it the Chinese music. I don't know. Is that meant to be Chinese? I don't know. Maybe it's just in my mind. To me, it sounds like, you know, Lower Manhattan, where they have what's called Chinatown. You know. Okay. Yeah, I'm just seeing the clams in front of me, all the seafood, you know, of Chinatown. You know, that's okay. If you're ever in New York, don't go to Chinatown. But right near Chinatown is the Lower East Side. That's where you should go. That's the home of Rav Moshe Feinstein's. Okay, fine. So we're in Chaf Beis Pasuk Vav. Everybody with me? Chaf Beis Pasuk Vav.
And now we're in
Parshas Ki Tetzer. We're in Ki Tetzer. We're in Dvarim Chaf Beis Pasuk Vav. And here we have one of two psuchos. And that's Ki Kore Kansipar Lefanech. Okay then? Now, if our feast... Are we okay? No, nothing chashud over there.
No.
Okay. If our thesis is correct, then there should be an obvious difference or an obvious separation between Pasuk Hey and Pasuk Vav. Okay then? Now, we're in Perek Chav Beis. Perek Chav Beis of Sefer Dvarim starts with what? I'm going to give you two choices. So you'll have a 50% chance that you get the right answer. Does it deal with los ases or essays? From the beginning. Take it from the beginning. The beginning of Perek Chav Beis, is it Losa says do not?
It's a
Losa, and it continues, correct? And it goes on, lo this, lo that, or you take a look in Pasuk, Dalit, lo siris, chamor achicha, then it goes on to lo yeh kli gever, and then all of a sudden there's an abrupt change. What happens in Pasuk Vav? What do we have now?
Ki
karei, okay, and we're going to have shalach to shalach asa'im, which is what? A mitzvah saseh. So let's say that the pay here is an obvious return button, because now we're going with a major shift, an obvious shift, from mitzvos lo saseh to mitzvos saseh. The other pay in the parasha is at the very end of the parasha, if you'll fast forward to Perek Chav Hei, Pasuk Yud Zayin, and what that's called the maftir, and all of a sudden we find the second pay, which means an obvious distinction, and what's there? Rabosai, what mitzvah? Amolek. Amolek deserves a separate parsha in the Torah. And it's got to be obvious to everyone. This is not a mitzvah like any other mitzvah. This is a mitzvah that is going to take Klal Yisrael and define its purpose, its objective, both as a nation and as a group of individuals. Every single individual is obligated in this mitzvah, and this mitzvah is part of the what's called, again in fancy English, the eschatological vision of the divine being, of the Akris Hayomim, and again, Ayin, the shiur that I gave yesterday here, 2 days ago. I gave on Shabbos, excuse me. We're already up to Yom Shlishi, I forgot. I gave 4 days ago here before Mincha about why Amalek is in a separate category. All the other mitzvahs of the Torah that are given in Parshas Ki Tetze have to have what? In order to justify the Samach. What's the key word that I'm looking for?
Connection.
A connection.
Doctor, the Otsal does take it into account, but just leaves out the Samach and the Pei. He does take it into it because both Tuchot. He started on another.
Okay,
line, and all the
Doc. I'm not. I don't mean Chas V'Shalom. This was not a tirade against art school. Halavai, when I get up to the oil of my MS, I should have a tippy tip of the schar of art school. I'm not saying. I'm just saying that what the beauty of this chumash is, if you'll take a look at it, is that without blinking, you know, it strikes you that there's every other word, every other verse, he has a samach to it. And you wonder why, because each mitzvah l'chora is a separate, independent mitzvah. What's the chiddush of the samach here that appears no less than 42 times in Parashas Ki Tetze? That we have to find the connection to the mitzvahs. Do you follow my point? Again, it's not going to be an obvious connection, otherwise it would have been what? I'm saying, it wouldn't have... Let me take back that sentence because it wasn't clear. It's not that on an obvious level to the onlooker there's a separation between one mitzvah to the other. No, just the other way around.
There must be a connection between the mitzvahs.
Yeah, what I'm saying is like this, that the samach is conveying that there's something below the surface. Okay, instead of a samach, we'll call it an S. An S stands for below the surface. Okay. BVS. Okay. BTS. Below the surface. Okay. Yes. Below the surface means that, you know what? If you had your knee-jerk response, you would have intuitively said, let's put a pay there. The chiddush of the samach is that, no, don't put a pay there. You think that these mitzvahs are discrete, independent one of the other. No. The chiddush is, this is a responsibility in Torah that you are obligated, so to speak, I don't mean literally, but what I mean is within the context of Talmud Torah, to find the connection. My goal for the next few minutes, before we get to the L part of the shiur, is to try to find a connection between two mitzvahs. Again, I can't do this for the entire parasha, but what I want to do is, if you take a look again in Dvarim Chav Beis, Pasuk Ches. Okay, Pasuk Ches. And again, so Doc, tell me in the article, because you say you can figure it out. What's between Zion and Ches? Well, actually, we've already given away the answer because we've seen the two psuchos. So by definition, it's going to be a stuma. So again, if my theory is correct, the stuma is telling me that what came before, which is the mitzvah of what? What came in psukim vav and zayt shiluch hakan, and what came afterwards, which is the mitzvah of makeh in pasuk ches, although they seem to have no connection whatsoever, one mitzvah applies out in the field and one of it applies in the house. Nevertheless, we're obligated to find the connection. So if I want to find the connection to understand the deeper meaning of why it's a stuma and not a psucha, why there's no obvious return button here, where am I going to look? What's the first source that I should look at? I may not find an answer in that source.
Rashi.
So let's look at Rashi. So Rashi tells me, which is number 13 on your handout, if you don't have the original Rashi. Rashi says, "Im kiyamta mitzvah shiluach haken or hakan." Usually, kan is smichus. In other words, if it's kan sipur, there's a pasach under the kuf. If there's no smichus and there's no word, it's shiluach haken, right? Is hofech, I'm sorry, sofcha livnos bayis chadosh, utekayim mitzvahs makish, and mitzvah goreris mitzvah. You may have noticed on the top of your page, I add in the words mitzvah goreris mitzvah. So Rashi finds a very interesting connection here between one mitzvah and the other, and it means mitzvah goreris mitzvah. Okay. Now, the word goreres has many different meanings and nuances of differences and meanings. I'm a person, this is my agenda in life, my prejudice in life. I'm a Shas guy. Reading, I like to learn Gemara. That's what I enjoy most in my life. Chumash is fun, but it's not Gemara. What can I tell you? I'm a big Torah Shebal Peh guy. In Torah Shebal Peh, the word grera is always used to indicate that A and B have a certain complementary relationship, which means
linked.
That... Say it again?
Linked.
No, more than that. What I'm saying, Harvey, is not just a linkage, but more than that, it's a complementary relationship, meaning each one in and of itself is incomplete. And the completeness is clinched when you have both A and B. Again, if we had time, we'd go through Shas. I would show you many examples of this. That's called Grera. What we're saying now is that Mitzvah A, which is called Shiluach HaKan, and Mitzvah B, which is called Makeh, are two mitzvahs that work in tandem and complement each other. That's called Mitzvah Goreris Mitzvah. In other words, the question I'm trying to answer is, why did the Torah have to choose Shiluach HaKen and Mitzvahs Makeh to establish this principle and teach us that Mitzvah Goreris Mitzvah? L'chora, any two mitzvahs can be Mitzvah Goreris Mitzvah. You know, you're a religious guy and you are observant and you motivated yourself to fulfill a mitzvah. God's going to give you another opportunity to do another mitzvah, correct? That's the standard classical understanding of Mitzvah Goreris Mitzvah. You deserve as part of your reward to be presented with the opportunity to do another mitzvah. So you really meant to do one mitzvah, and at the end of the day you'll get two for the price of one. That's called Mitzvah Goreris Mitzvah. What I'm suggesting today, we have different agunim here. Thank God they don't go off together at the same time, because I don't think they would harmonize. No, it's okay. I just kid you around. Rabosai, you're not my 18-year-old students that I taught for the last 30 years, you know, where you have to be there, and if you're not there, you're not disciplined, you get punished for it. You know, you're here totally voluntarily, and you get all the scar for that. What I'm suggesting is that I'd like to find an answer to the question, why did the Torah choose the mitzvahs of Shiluach HaKan and the mitzvah of Makeh in order to present this thesis of and teach this rule of mitzvah goreris mitzvah? Is the question clear?
That doesn't make that much sense. I mean, there's no
sins, you said?
they don't make sense.
Oh, they don't make sense. I think you said sins. They don't make sense.
There's no reason.
Ah, you mean they're above logic?
Yes.
Are you sure that Makkah is above logic? I mean, if you leave a roof, how do you pronounce it? Roof?
Roof. Yeah.
Roof. It's interesting. In Yiddish, if you're a Satmar, it's called roof.
Roof.
Roof. Depends on your pronunciation. So that if you leave a roof without protection, what's going to happen? The Torah actually spells it out for you. The Torah says, "Lo tosim domim veisecha ki yipol anofel mimenu."
So fall off.
Fall off. So I would say that this is perhaps one of those mitzvahs that are called mishpatim and not chukim, in the sense that we really logically understand them. So let me present to you a thesis, and then we want to go on again to... We have many, many sources that I want to go through today. A thesis of Rav Weinberg, who is the Tolner Rebbe. Are you familiar with him? He's actually from Canada originally. And he says the following. That back in the day, not today, where you open up, you know, you go to the your local supermarket and you buy chicken and you bring it home. It's already kikashered, you know. You just simply put it into the oven, you know, cut it up into pieces if you have to. Now you can get it cut up. Back in the day, you had to catch a fowl. You had to catch a bird. And it was a whole to-do. You know, catching birds was not easy. So we should thank Hashem when we make the bracha, shakol niyeh b'dvarav, a piece of chicken. Thank Hashem that we don't have to go out in the wild, you know, and trap birds. Here's a guy who finds a bird. It's mamish sitting there in front of him. Back in the day, if you could just close your eyes and envision it, what would have been his knee-jerk response? What would have been his immediate move?
Catch it.
Catch the bird, shecht it, and eat it for dinner. Says the Torah, shalech t'shalech ha-se'im. That's what we call an exercise in zehirus, if you can write that down. Zehirus means the midah of pushing off your natural impulse, your sense of immediate self-gratification. It's a self-discipline, which according to the Brisa of Rav Pinchas Ben-Yair, who goes through all the different levels until you can finally reach the level of Ruach HaKodesh, Zehirus is a tremendous level. Tonight in my Maral Shir, I'm going to talk a lot about the mitzvah of Zehirus, the midah of Zehirus, to overcome your natural tendency. The Rambam says we should never fill up our bellies when we eat. We should always leave a little. We want to be gluttonous, eat and eat and fresh and fresh. No! There's a midah of Zehirus. And that Zehirus comes to the fore in Shalech to Shalech Asa'im. Don't take the mother for yourself. Then we have another midah, which is called the midah of Zrizus. Zrizus means, in fancy English, it's called alacrity, but nobody knows what that word means. But it means urgency. It means to be a Zariz. Don't delay for a minute. I have a friend from Canada who wrote an entire book on the concept of Zrizus. How you should come to shul on time, and you should do all the mitzvahs on time. The most perfect example of Zrizus is the mitzvah of Makkah. Imagine, there are many mitzvahs that apply to the house. You've built a house. It took you months and months to build the house. What's the first mitzvah that's incumbent upon you? And you cannot delay it. You're not letting it walk into the house until you build what? A Makkah fence around. That teaches you the midah of what? Of Zrizus. We don't realize, and sometimes we don't appreciate the greatness of Torah. We have 613 mitzvahs. Every single mitzvah is meant to engender, to teach us and train us a different midah and the attributes of the service of Hashem. And these two mitzvahs form what I call a complete whole, a complementary whole. That's what it means, gera. You have achieved the midah of Zehirus. Instead of taking the bird and shechting it and eating it for dinner as you would want to do, because here God gave you the opportunity of having a fowl, a bird right in front of your eyes. No, you overcame that and you fulfilled the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. That was Zehirus. Now Hashem says, immediately I'm going to train you in a different mitzvah. But that mitzvah is also part of the training, because the Gemara tells us, Rav Pinchas Ben Yon tells us, that Zahirus Mevili Deis Rizus, that when we have these two midos, we're ready to move on to the next level. And that's what Shiluach HaKan and the mitzvah of Makeh are meant to engender within us, these two midos of Zahirus and Zrizus, to perfect and fine-tune our nefesh, our soul, and that's called mitzvah, goreris mitzvah. Yeah, go ahead.
When you talk about the tzipor, is it a bird? Could it also be a chicken? Because chicken also lays eggs, and if you want to take
a chicken,
you want to try some of the
I think so. I'm pretty sure that's so. Mm-hmm. It's anything that could, you know, fly in the air. I think a chicken flies in the air, does it not?
In a fashion.
Okay, fine. Now, it's really interesting that when the Torah chooses these two mitzvahs and puts them together with a stuma, meaning it's not an obvious connection, but it's below the surface, that's the idea of a stuma, it also touches on another concept, which is called hachana l'mitzvah. You know that amongst Hasidim, they say that more important than the mitzvah is the preparation for the mitzvah, all the effort that you put into set up a mitzvah. I have friends, by the way, and I'm not in this category, who will go together with a group, a chabura, they will rent out a bakery, a small oven, before Yontif, before Pesach, in order to bake their own matzah. And they wake up early in the morning, it's an 8-hour shift, they end up with three burnt to matzahs, they're all burnt up anyway, I don't know, but anyway, I shouldn't be so facetious, but they get the schar of hachana l'mitzvah. I come to the Seder, you know, I paid through the nose for the matzahs that I get, the shmur matzahs, and I just simply eat the matzah, but I'm lacking that element of hachana l'mitzvah. It's interesting that Shiluach HaKan is the one mitzvah of the Torah, and it stands apart from all the other 612, where there's no hachana l'mitzvah. In fact, you cannot prepare for the mitzvah. The Gemara Chulin reads the pasuk very carefully. It says in the pasuk, ki kare kan sipar l'fanecha. Now again, yikare is written with an aleph, but the Gemara darshins it al pi torch v'al peh with a hey, and yikare means you chance upon it. The Gemara says that you cannot go through the wilderness or through the forests and seek out a Kan Sipur. If you happen to chance upon a Kan Sipur, then and only then are you obligated in the mitzvah.
But you can still do the mitzvah by going out and finding a bird.
Okay, but that's not the mitzvah itself. The real mitzvah is that without thinking twice about it, you see the Kan, it just presents itself, and again there are a lot of deeper meanings here as to why Hashem gave you the opportunity to do this mitzvah. Not everyone gets the opportunity. I don't know how many people in this room, by show of hands, have ever fulfilled the mitzvah Shiluach HaKan.
The bird didn't fly away. I couldn't get the bird to fly away.
It would not. No. You mean you tried to throw it?
I'm like clapping and roaring at the thing.
Going to look after his kids.
Okay, we have to take a course. We have to take, you know, Shiluach HaKan 1.1 here. You know, a syllabus in Shiluach HaKan. Makeh is the exact opposite. These two mitzvahs complement each other. Mitzvah Goreris, mitzvah for another reason. Makeh is the culmination of, I don't know what to say, is it weeks, I would say months, maybe even years of work. Today you pay an architect, you know, to write plans, to design plans, you pay an engineer, and I don't have to go through all the different workers that go in, you know, the Mishnah lists them in Kal Gadol, all the Malachas of Shabbos, in order to construct a house. And then, what's the first mitzvah that you have to do as a culmination of all this work and effort? The mitzvah of Makeh. That's a mitzvah which indicates that not that the Torah is asking for a spontaneous, knee-jerk response to the opportunity to do a mitzvah. On the contrary, this is a mitzvah that culminates a great deal of preparation of hachana l'mitzvah. So the Torah is telling you that both of these mitzvahs, each in its own way, is meant to fashion and fine-tune your nefesh. Okay. Now I'd like you to take a look at another dimension of this concept of goreres, but now in the opposite sense. What's antithetical, if you will, or polar opposite of mitzvah goreres mitzvah? Avera goreres avera. So take a look at the very beginning of Parshas Ki Tetze. And what section do we have at the very beginning? Eishes. Help me out here, Rabosai. Eishes
Yifasto.
Okay? Eishes Yifasto. Now, immediately after Eishes Yifasto, we have what's called the Parsha of an Isha Snua. Man marries two wives, and one of them is sort of, I don't know what word to use, despicable in his eyes, hated in his eyes.
Second class,
okay. And Rashi, if you take a look in Pasuk Yudalid, tells us that there's a connection here between the two. In Pasuk Yudalid, I meant to say. Did I say Yudalid?
Yeah.
I meant to say Yudalid, sorry. V'lakachtel choli isha lo dibra Torah ela keneged yetzahar. The Torah realizes that when a man takes this woman captive because he desires her in the war situation, he's going to ultimately marry a non-Jewish woman. Again, there's going to be a long process and gerus and the whole nine yards, but it's not really something that l'chatchila the Torah was interested in. We're not out there to set up marriages between a Jewish boy, a soldier who's a tzaddik and he goes out to battle, and a shiksa and so forth and so on. But lo divrei Torah ela keneged yetzahar. Now Rashi says that the connection here, the stuma again, the samach. You see again, if you, I don't know if the art scroll has it, but here in the blue between Yudalid and Tesvav, there's a samach, there's a stuma. And Rashi says, Im Nasa, if he takes advantage of this license, in the case of an Eishes Yifas Toar, Sofo Leos Nua. And at the end, the next parsha, if you turn to the next page, is Pasuk Yud Ches, again a Samach, and that's the parsha of Ben Sorer Umo. One thing leads to the other, until finally, Bisofo laholid mimena ben sorer umorer lachein nismichu aparshios halol. That's the samach that connects the parshios. So we have something called mitzvah avera goreres avera. Now, what I would like to know is, since we're holding in Chodesh Elul and we're preparing for Rosh Hashanah, and the theme, I think, of Chodesh Elul and the Aser Simei, I don't want to give out the answer, and the 10 days after Rosh Chodesh Elul, starting Rosh Chodesh Tishri and ending with Yom HaKippur, what's the central theme or the central obligation?
Tshuva.
Is there some connection, is it coincidental, that every year in and year out, we read Parshas Ki Tetze right before Rosh Hashanah, during Chodesh Elul, and when we're involved in the midst of Tshuva? So I want to point out to you that in Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Torah says that before he's ready to marry her, or before she, the Eishes Fasto, is ready to be had, to be married, there's got to be a preparation period. How long is that preparation period?
A month.
1 month. Yerach Yomim. 30 days. Okay? So keep this open on the side and take a look at your source sheet, which we're going to look at the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva in Perek Beis. This is number 6 on your page. The Rambam says, Umayhi HaTshuva. What is tshuva? I mean, obviously the Rambam has to address that question in Hilchos Tshuva. And he sets up a number of parts, basically three segments to the mitzvah of tshuva. Number one, he says, Sheyazov hachote cheto v'yasiru v'yasiro mimachshavto. So he has to make a decision from sin. That's called azivas hachet. He should put the sin out of his mind. Because again, if you start dwelling on the sin and the pleasure that you got from the sin, that's not going to be a good thing. Number two, the yigmar belibo shelo yaseu od. What's that called in the classical parlance of Hilchos Tshuva? Kabbalah, right? he has a decision here. The Rambam says that he won't repeat the sin. That's called Kabbalah. And then the Rambam says the Yisnachem al Ha'ofar. And that's what Michael was saying. Charata, he has to have regret. And then the Rambam tells us how powerful and how profound is the impact of his Kabbalah, his resolution on the future. Yoid Olav Yodea Talumos Shalo Yoshiv Lozeh Chet Liol. God in heaven, who knows all the secrets of man, will be able to testify about this individual, this true, genuine Baal Tshuva, that he'll never repeat the sin. So one of the great Bali Musar, who lived about a century ago, was Rabbi Itzala Petterberg. His last name was Blazer. He came from the city of Petersburg, St. Petersburg. And he's famous for a number of works that he wrote, one of which is a Musa Sefer called Kochvei Or. He also wrote Lamdish Sfarim too. He's a big Lamdin. And in this Sefer, he says the following. L'chora mashmos divrei Rambam, the impression you get from the Rambam, who ki im yoshuv bishuv pam lezachet ein ze tshuva, that the Rambam's barometer for a real genuine tshuva is that he doesn't repeat the sin. The Rambam seems to be implying that if he does repeat the sin, then it wasn't real tshuva. He says v'zeh tema, I have a kasha, I don't understand this. Chazal tell us that if a person does genuine tshuva, all his averos are atoned for. Correct? V'im akakach yoshiv lechet hu kemosha chote michadash. In other words, if the sin was removed through tshuva, then he already received a mechila from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What English word should I use for mechila? I said atoned, but there should be a better word. Can anybody help me out here?
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness. Great, excellent. He was already forgiven for the sin. Varishono shekfar nimchlu lo lotis karenu od. The concept of forgiveness, divine forgiveness, means that once Hashem is mochil, he'll never remember and mention the original sin. The godless, the greatness of tshuva and its far-reaching repercussions, then the sin is gone. It's been completely removed from his record. If the sin is removed from his record, why are we telling you, well, if he repeats the sin, we're going to say, wait a minute, you've already done that sin in the past. You were already guilty in the past. You're a repeated criminal. And therefore, we're going to undo all the mechila, and we're going to say that your tshuva is not a good tshuva. But that sin is gone. It's off the record. You know, it's like the judge says, I'll strike it from the record. If I struck it from the record, if there's such a word, then stricken it from the record, then how can you tell me that the second time you implement the sin, we're going to connect it to the first time that you sinned, and we're going to make you into a repeated sinner? You've already achieved tshuva on that first.
You obviously didn't do it right the first time.
Oh, so how do we know if you did it right the first time or you did not? So for this, I want to study with you the inside of the Beis HaLevi. And this is number 9. We're skipping number 8 simply because we don't have enough time for it. But if you get a chance, you'll do number 8. That's the great founder of the Muslim movement, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And the Beis HaLevi, his name is Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, in number 9 on the bottom right of your page says that the Pasuk says in Koheles, you know, with your permission, I'm going to read this kind of quickly and then, you know, try to highlight certain points. He says, means there was something extraneous to man that seduced him to sin. Inside, inherent within man, there was no desire for sin. Upitui mamar shemi bachutz legufo, and the pitui, the seduction of something outside, external to his body, which is Anochosh, Ba Olav came to upon him, Ibachutz Lasito, to seduce him to sin. Vihine Ato Achrachet, however, man changed as a result of that sin, is Gufa Odom Vichomro Note Betivo Lahora. Now the Natiya, the inclination towards sin, is inherent in man himself. It becomes internal rather than external. The nimshach aleha, he has a meshich, he's pulled towards sin. But on the other hand, man is also given a koach from his neshama, and if he utilizes that koach properly, he has the potential to overcome that inclination towards sin. And man is basically involved in an inner struggle, a battle, which is two equal forces within him. On the one hand, the koach Vanatiya Lahara for evil, on the other hand, the Koach HaSeichel Shebo, which is from the Neshama Lahetiv, to do the right thing. Ve'adam, and man through his actions can decide his path. He can incline himself if he chooses to towards evil, Chas V'Shalom, or towards good if he chooses and makes the right decision. And therefore, he says the following. If he's magbir bi'atzmo koach hanatiya lahara, if he strengthens the power of evil within him based on his sin, then machlish bi'atzmo koach hatov shebo, he willy-nilly will weaken his power to do good. Umechazek bi'atzmo tshuka lahara, and his desire for evil becomes more and more profound. And that's what the pasuk in Mishlei means when it says, nefesh rosho sarah. It means there's something called hergel. When a person gets used to repeating sin, it becomes part of his nature. And it becomes so much more difficult for him once he's addicted to overcome that addiction. But the im bocher betova, if on the other hand he would choose good, us then, b'maisav hatovim magbir, he strengthens the koach hatov, shebo within him, achinesafech liteva, al yidei hergel. Now, his hergel, his natural inclination, becomes very powerful towards good. Fine. Now, he continues here on the top of the next column, which is number 10. And he says, vehine misha chata. Someone now changes his nature towards evil, because, as we said before, the impact of evil is to strengthen his inclination towards evil. He says, "Hudome lekli kasha shenitraf." He gives the mashal of a pot that became treif because he cooked a forbidden food in the pot, and now it becomes absorbed. The taste of that food becomes absorbed in the walls of the utensil. Bepnimius hakli tama isur. There's a blia of tama isur in the kli. And the only thing he can do now, if he wants to subject the kli to hechsher, to be machsher through hagola, the first thing he has to do is what's called. Hadocha. Excellent. Hadocha. Sorry. Is hadocha. The first process is the process of hadocha. What's hadocha? He says, washing, rinsing, right? He says on the surface of the utensil, there's a certain fatty substance, a film, so to speak, of the isur, and it surrounds the utensil. He's got to remove that through hadocha. Diem lokein, if not, the hagola, when he puts it into a hot boiling pot, will not serve him well. But achar shehudach, after the hadocha, and at least on externally the utensil is clean, there's no be'en, there's no substance or shamnunis of isur on the outside of the kli, then, and only then, he can subject the kli to what? To agola. Avol adayin hu kli trefa. It's still treif, because although you remove the surface level shamnunis, but you still have the tam bolua, the tam iser bolua, and then you need hagola. He says the same thing can apply in the nimshal to a bal tshuva. The bal tshuva at the first level has to remove from himself the avera itself. He has to distance himself from the Avera even before he does a profound transformation of soul, of personality. Lebalia Havera Etzlo. Okay? So he's got to push away the sin. That's on the first level.
Shouldn't even see it again.
Correct. He shouldn't see it. He shouldn't be obsessed with it in his thoughts. And now we continue on the left column with number 11. And he says, "Ubishum hachi." We're almost finished here. Tzarech mikodem lahaver aver miolav vizen nasa al yidei shlosha chelkei atshuva. So the first level is to do this three-step process that the Rambam has formulated. Heim ikrei v'yisodi atshuv midaraisa charata gemura al ha'ovar kabbalah al ha'asid v'od charata. So he's done all these three levels. And now at this point, on the external level, the kli is clean. Correct? It's been subjected to hadacha. Now what we're ready for is what? Is hagola, to remove the tam habalua. So nishara kli naki v'adayin hu kikli naki shein olav mamosha shal isur v'rak betocho nivla bo isur. What's the betocho nivla bo ha isur that he has to remove? That in the nimshal is the teva and the tshuka. You remember that we said the whole theory was that when a person does a sin, it strengthens within him that propensity, that part of his nefesh, which has an inclination for sin, and his desire for sin becomes more powerful. That was the hergel that we spoke about before, that he has become, so to speak, addicted to sin. V'zeh nigram al yidei masav, and that was a result, the impact of his actions. Hare adayin kosher bo bitivo. Even though he's removed, he's thrust the sin from the outside, that's the hadach element, but still the teva, his nature now, still has that craving and that the hergel in his very nature, in his very teva for sin. Ki berega echad kosher, if he has a very challenging moment, it's going to be very hard for him to overcome that teva within him, shenishtakeabo, which has been deeply anchored, you know, and submerged in the very essence, fiber of his nefesh. And lasas lo teva chadash, he's going to have to change his entire nature inwardly. And he says the only way he can do that is through a very profound, a very extreme process, which is called Mesiras Nefesh. Lezet tzarech habal tshuva achrakach laharbos bitzar. It's not enough the surface level of regretting the sin. He's got to intensify his sense of anguish and disappointment over the sin. Ad shegodol atzar v'amarirus, the bitterness within him about the sin, sheyeshlo ka'es al avero sha'ovar, that profound emotional anguish, distress, bitterness is going to be oker milibo. It'll absolutely undermine and remove from the depths of his heart hatshuka v'hateva v'hanetia lahara. V'gam yagbir al yidei ha-mitzvot sheyaseh. Now he's got to do many, many mitzvos in order to create a hergel, a teva, and an addiction towards mitzvos to strengthen the tov shebo. Ad sheyoshuv tivo letov. That's his teva, his inner teva. He's then, he's undergone a process of hagola, and he's going to be able through this A plus B, number one, to be magbir and intensify his merirus and his charata, number two, by multiplying his mitzvos and strengthening the koach hatov shebo, he's going to successfully be able to transform his teva into a teva tov, v'yetze mimenu hara habolua bo, right, the evil that's been absorbed into his nefesh, that teva. In other words, the more profound that blia was, the more he's got to work in order to get it plata, to get it thrown out. And therefore, kol asher yavo ba'esh tavir ba'esh, you know, something that was direct contact with fire needs libud, something that was in water, it only needs hagola v'cheinu v'bal tshuva. But v'hine, he says, kol zehu b'chlal b'chol hashana. That's during the entire year. Omnom, there's one day in the year which is unique and is different than the rest of the year, B'Yom HaKippur. Yesh bo B'Yom HaZeh Maila Gedola. Yom HaKippur has a tremendous gift to mankind, to the Jewish people. B'Miyad Shenischare to Adam. Immediately when he undergoes Charoto, Mekabel Olav Loshuv, Mimaisav Haroim, Visvadalem, he did what would normally be only the surface level Agola. And the first stages of tshuva is HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechazdo. God is a special divine compassion. Mavir Mimenu Atshuka. God Himself cleanses a person. That's called Lifnei Hashem Titaru, meaning we take the first step, the initiative, and then God completes the process. Umavir Anetiyo Shehigbir Biatzma Lahara. Maviru Mimenu Lagamre. Tal Yidei Atshuva Shaosim Biyom HaKippurim Mechadesh Libo Liyiraso. V'nosein lahem leiv chadash. So Rabosai, again, there's a lot more here, but we're running out of time. I just wanted to connect this to the parasha that we've been studying. And if you take a look at number 17 on your page, the Sfarno points out that u'bachsas avia ves'ima yerach yomim. Why is it that in the process of preparing this Eishes Yifas Tor for marriage with a Jewish man, she has to undergo a bechia, a crying of 1 month? She'ta'azvein v'tisyashev bazeh b'dayta shelo lachshov bom od. She disconnects herself from her family, obviously her parents and her religion, her culture, shelo yachshov bom od. And that takes a 30-day period. Ke'inyon v'shichi amech u'beis avich, as a pasuk in Tanakh. So the Beis HaLevi, and before, and at the same time as the Beis HaLevi, all want to say that in order to shift from the mitzvah, from the avera goreres avera mode, to the mitzvah goreres mitzvah mode, what we need during the whole year round, again with the exception of Yom HaKippurim, is we need a 30-day period of cutting ourselves off from the Avera, from the Netiya, and from the Teva. And the source for this, I think, is here in number 13, Rabbeinu Yonah. Because Ki Seitzel Milchama Shana Rabbeinu Mitzvah Goreres Mitzvah Avera Goreres Avera. And he says that mikoach hateva huzeh, that when a person gets involved in a mitzvah, he, so to speak, ingrains within his teva the netiyah for a mitzvah. But if chas v'shalom does the opposite, he's hurgal tivo instead of to mitzvos, avera gorer savera, and he has to undergo his teva. And the classical case of a person in the Tanakh who has to cut himself away from his teva, or her teva, I should say, is the case of the Eishes Yifas Tohar. And therefore, if a person will take this period of time, so if you take a look at number 16, and with that we'll conclude, and I apologize for the hour, he says, the Beis HaLevi says, V'yod olav yodea talumo shalo yoshiv lezeh chet liolam. The al yedei masav haroim nase beligbo tshukov amchshacha l'ra v'avera goreres avera. He says that why is it so difficult, this challenge of tshuva, such that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will testify that he won't do the avera again? How do you reach that level? After all, once he's done the avera, he's projected or injected within his very nefesh this desire and this tshuka, this teva to do evil. How he's going to remove that shuka and that teva and that hergel? Habal tshuva tzarch lakar milibo mitivo, from his teva he has to undermine osam shocha lahara shechidish biatzal yidei masa v'yeh kemoshaya mikodem. He's got to go back through tshuva to the state of his nefesh that existed before he did the sin, because otherwise his teva and his hergel is going to bring him back time and time again to a sin. And that's what the pasuk means, chadesh yomenu kekedem, that we should do a tshuva that will, in a sense, recreate ourselves and bring us back to the original state that we were in and our neshamas were in before we did the seith. And we see over and over again that people regret their actions, but biodes yomim, a few days later, chozrim v'masav v'rishon, he goes back and he repeats the sin. Zeu simon shelo nekar belibo, he has not successfully undergone a process of transformation on the inward side, inherently in his nefesh. Lakar milibo osam shacha lahara, that hergel and that desire, rak alzman muot, he was only able to do it, to bridge a very short period of time. Now he was challenged again three days later, a week later, 2 weeks later, and sure enough, the hergel within him, that teva, took over. V'nischazek al tivo, he wasn't able to be, to overcome his teva. He wasn't able to be oker the tshuka. I promised you'd say a few words about Elul. Here it is. The month of Elul is a month that's dedicated l'kvo bo tshuva before Rosh Hashanah. And this is the challenge and the opportunity of the month of Elul. And what does it mean? Yesh, this is a nisayon, a bechina, sheyeda kol oda biatzmo. He can test himself, and the litmus test is im kvar nekar, has he successfully removed the chet legamri, meaning even from the tshuka that's within him, orak mischazek, or is he just on a very temporary, superficial level doing the hadacha and strengthening himself against the tshuka? Ukshayavar Yom HaKippurim Yoshev L'maisav Rishonim, and if it's only a superficial tshuva, then he hasn't succeeded this test and this opportunity of Elul in order to change his teva. So how long of a period of time does the Torah guarantee you for this kind of a tshuva to change the very inherent teva that you've created, that you've generated within yourself? Lazehu Shloshim Yom, he needs the 30 days of Elul. Uksheino chote shloshim yom, if he could desist from sin for a 30-day period, simon, that proves shenekar achet legafre, that he did not only the hechsher of hadacha, but he also achieved the hagola. He was able to uproot from within him that teva that Rabbi Yonah speaks about in Shari Tshuva, and the teva that the Beis Halevi speaks about over and over again. And we ask ourselves the question, why the magic number 30? Where does it come from? How do we know the 30-day period is enough, is sufficient to change one's inner self and cut themselves off so that now they become a new entity and a new personality? What's going to be the source for that, Rav Osai? Eishet Yifas Toar, because the Torah says Yerach Yomim. And after the Yerach Yomim, says the Sforno, Tisyashev Bazeh B'daitish Lo Lachshov Ba'od, complete alienation and complete severance from her culture, her Avodah Zarah culture, her parents, and the Beis Aviyah. And therefore, coming back to complete number 7, Rabbi Itzel of Petterberger's Kasha, and Michael's answer to his Kasha, why is it that if a person repeats the sin, he should be held responsible for that, and his tshuva is no longer a tshuva? Why do we go retroactively and say, well, he did tshuva, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mochel him? Why now are we saying, well, if he repeats the sin, then we're going to connect the sin of today with the sin of yesterday or yesteryear, and we're going to say, you know what? That proves that this was not a real Baal Tshuva. But the first sin was completely wiped off. The answer is nain. There are two levels of tshuva. There's one level of tshuva where you just simply cover over the sin. It's like a cut and you put a bandage on it, but it's still a wound and it could open up, chas v'shalom. So you've done the hadach on a surface level, but you really haven't changed your insides. And you haven't transformed your personality to uproot that teva and that tshuka that was generated by the sin. And what's the litmus test? If you experience a repeat performance of the sin, buddy, You know what that means? You really didn't do the tshuva that we're talking about. The tshuva that we're talking about during the entire year, with the exception of Yom HaKippurim, is the tshuva of Hagolah. Not the tshuva of Hadacha, but the tshuva of Hagolah. And Chodesh El, and with this we'll complete the Shia, is a special divine gift that was given to the Jewish people gratis, to have a 30-day period to test ourselves, to face this opportunity and this challenge, to see if we can remove ourselves from sin for a 30-day period and then guarantee ourselves that we have removed and uprooted that Tevara, that Hergel. We no longer have the Tshuka for the Avera. We've achieved, in Mirtz Hashem, the Tshuva of, and the Hechsher of, Hagol of Mamish, and then Yoed Olav Yodea Talumos Sheshuv Lo Yachso Lezeachet Li Olam will be Zochim Ritz Hashem to the complete Tshuva during this Chodesh El. Will come to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur with a contrite heart, with a clean slate, having been a Birya Chadasha Kei Ratzon. I don't know.